I'm Gab, he's Jules Gray Skies over West London, but that's okay because we have a full show. This is the weekend of Last Minute Goals, crazy comeback. Sevilla, Real Madrid, Barcelona, not just in France, by the way, Manchester United scoring late, Inter Milan scoring late, but let's start with one game that was, I don't want to say settled early, but definitely the goals didn't come late, and that's Chelsea against Tottenham. Jules, I'm going to start with Tottenham, actually, this time, not Chelsea, because when people saw the lineup, they're from Tottenham said, ah, we've seen this before. Formation change from Antonio Conte, Matt Doherty starting, Lucas Moura on the bench. People thought back to, if you remember the first game of Conte's second season, where he was unhappy with the transfers, lack of spending, he played Jeremy Boga, who at the time was a no-name in the starting lineup. I didn't see it like that at all. Did you?
No. I thought, and to be fair, I thought they wanted to force Chelsea to play wide and not to be able to go through the centre to Lukaku or the Kovacic runs or the Mount runs, which I don't think worked out because I don't think, on the other hand, that Conte and Spurs expected Chelsea to line up the way they did in that 4-1-4-1 formation. But I didn't. I thought it was just a very defensive lineup to be quite cautious in the first half, to try to not concede many chances. And I think they would have been very happy with a 0-0 draw in that game. They lost their three previous games against Chelsea, including the two in the League Cup from Conte against Tuchel. And I just think they're set up not to concede, not to give away chances, to be very defensive. In fairness, there was nine defensive players. Okay, 8.5 if you give Cessegno a 0.5 attacking or defense. So it's a very, very defensive-minded team.
Yeah, and I completely agree with that. I think also the fact that they played Chelsea twice, he wanted to give them a different look.
Yeah.
He knew, because I won't get into it, but he knew that Chelsea were going to line up the way they did with Malang Sarr and Azpilicueta at fullback, so he knew he was going to face that challenge. There was a major, a lot to talk about with referees in this show. We'll be getting to you, Liverpool and Arsenal later, but On the Harry Kane one, Conte was incensed because Spurs do nothing in the first half, but they don't concede. Late in the first half, Harry Kane's through. He gives a little one-handed shove to Thiago Silva, who goes down. For those who have a certain image of English football, you know, it's physical and so on, that's not something to call the game.
Which is what Conte said. He said, maybe in Italy you give the foul, but not here. This is strange, he said.
Is he right?
I don't know. I spoke to Thiago Silva after the game and he said, listen, at the speed we were going to, even a little push, a little shove is enough to make me fall down, and it's a foul every day. He said there's not even a controversy. Then I spoke to Doherty, who said that the Spurs player didn't even realise that the ref gave a foul against Kane because they didn't see anything wrong doing. And certainly they felt really harshly done with that.
Wait, so Doherty thought that Thiago Silva just fell over by himself?
Yeah, he thought that because he tried to anticipate and basically got caught by
his wrong-footed and his momentum took
Him over. Yeah, exactly. And they thought maybe it was an offside given or something, but definitely not a push by Kane on Silva. I thought it was a push from where I was sat in the stadium. I thought
you would have disallowed the goal.
Yeah, I thought it was the right call, to be fair.
Yeah, I have a slightly higher tolerance, I think, for some level of physicality because if they'd been closer, if he hadn't used his hand, if he'd used his shoulder, we might view it differently.
Yeah.
I think there's also, and I think this is probably the only moment I'm going to defend referees, or some of the refereeing performances we saw in this
game. That's brave from you.
I think there's also a sense that, you know, people often criticize, oh, the refereeing in the Premier League is different. And then when they get into Europe, you know, this whole like, oh, he's entitled to go for the ball nonsense. And then in Europe it gets flagged and it hurts. I don't have a problem with them trying to bring things into line or try to bring things into line so that we have one refereeing standard. I'm all for physicality. I think it does add something to the game.
Yeah.
But a push to the small of the back is not physicality. That's not physicality. As I understand, it doesn't add to the entertainment. It doesn't, you know.
But does he get the ball if he doesn't push Thiago Silva? Who gets to the ball first?
See, this is the thing. I'm not 100. I think, I don't know what's going through Harry Kane's mind, if it's an instinctive thing, if it happens, how strong the put, whether he's just checking, trying to get the distance from him. I would have liked Harry Kane's chances of getting to the ball without the push.
I think he's such an intelligent player that he knows that that's what he has to do to get to the ball. Otherwise, Thiago Silva has it first. And to be fair, Kane's reaction after the goal is disallowed is not like He's not instant, he's not going mad or anything, no. Saying this is a robbery or anything like this. So
he looks stunned, more like. A word on Hakim Ziyech. You like your techers?
Oh my God! And again, from where I was sat, I was literally just behind the, just purely in that diagonal of the goal. It's incredible. Lloris doesn't even move because he thinks the ball goes out. It's just an incredible player. And remember what we said, I think, after the League Cup game, maybe, that this is a system that suits him far more, Ziyech.
Yeah.
Coming inside from the right instead of the back three or the back five, if you
and
want.
And having to operate in that,
ten inside role. Yeah. And that's why he's so much better now than he was before.
All right, Jules. For the time being, I'm going to call you Fabio. We're going to do a little bit of role play.
Okay.
You're going to be Fabio, and I'm going to be Antonio.
Bye, bye.
I go to you, and I say, Fabio.
Si.
I need a reserve center forward.
Yeah.
I need a midfielder.
Yeah.
I mean, this is just a minimum.
Minimum.
I need a defender because Romero's coming back and God knows when, and I don't know how he is.
Yeah.
I need another defender because I have too much Dyer and Tanganga. I mean, Dyer he likes, but still, like I like him.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you start thinking about a goalkeeper, two goalkeepers, because what's up with Hugo?
A wide player.
Right?
Well, no, he's now extended his contract, so he's
still. Yeah, I mean, I'm still going to need a backup for him, and he's getting older, and he's little, although he made one great save off of that crazy Ziyech shot.
Yeah.
How are we doing all this? What are you doing, Fabio? What are you working on, Fabio? Come on, Fabio.
Yeah, so Antonio, I think you're right to be cross and annoyed, because I think you would have expected us to have signed players by now. This is January 25th. You know, it's a difficult market, January.
I always say that. You got your directors of football always say it's a difficult market.
You have to say a lot of Katsu as well, because I was sat right behind the bench, as you know, at Chelsea. And the number of Katsus, and if you don't know what Katsu means, go and look for it. It's a rude word.
Yeah.
That hurts in that game. It was crazy. Like, I can tell you that Sessegnon got a lot of it. You know, it's one of those where we often say, before we go back to our role play, where... You really want your half to end when you're on Conte's side, right? Because Doherty in the first half and Tanganga, like, constantly on them. And then you could see at halftime, they were like, yes, second half, we're on the other side. And he can shout, but there's a long way to go compared to the first half. Antonio, you know that is difficult. We're trying to do Adama Traoré, and we are quite positive that we will make that one happen. But I don't think you get anything else. Are you happy with that?
In January.
If you only get Adama, are you happy
with
that?
What if we get rid of Lo Celso? Can I have somebody if I get rid of that Lo Celso?
No one wants Lo Celso. I don't know what I can do with him.
Would you
be happy if you only have Adama?
No, I want more. I need more. You want me to finish top four? What do you want me to do?
Okay. How big is the gap between our squad at Tottenham and the Chelsea squad?
It's enormous.
It is enormous.
No, okay. All right, now I'm going to finish my role playing myself, because we should have done this the other way around. You could have been Colton, I could have been Parra, because I would have told him, okay, listen, Antonio.
What would you say if you're Paratici?
This is what I would say. All right, dude. You know, when I left Juve, because we've been in touch all this time, that we were going into a team with an ownership group that's very cautious about spending money. They will spend for the right guy.
Yeah.
They weren't going to spend because they had all this uncertainty over Harry Kane, and that is the single biggest thing to deal with. Because if we sell Kane, we get a big pile of money, we need to make a bunch of signings. It's not going to be one in, one out. We're not going to spend all the Kane money on one guy, but we're going to have to figure out what kind of team we are and where we need to strengthen. So that is kind of what stopped us from making a lot of decisive moves in the summer, right? You know that we have Ali and Ndombele, who you don't seem to like very much right now, but those are expensive players. Those are players who are on sizable salaries, big amortization in Ndombele's case.
Yeah.
You know, there's only so much we can do. So be happy if I get you Adama Traoré. But by the way, if Adama
Traoré... I think my role play was pretty good. That's what I said.
If Adama Traoré comes, Antonio, I don't want to see your head exploding and your hair fall out. Your hair won't fall out because it's glued on. But I don't want to see your hair falling out if he makes a run, beats three players, and then doesn't finish. Because you know that's the player you're getting. You're getting the guy for the one-on-ones and so on to make the runs. But, you know, he is what he is. Yeah.
On the other hand, you don't finish top four by beating again. We go back to the same thing, by beating Chelsea, Liverpool or City. They're too good for Spurs, right, even with Conte. The best he could have done yesterday was a 0-0 draw, defending really well and deep like they did in the first half pretty much. Or maybe winning the game 1-0 on a Kane's goal on the counter-attack of a bit of a fluke or something that is somehow created. But that's a long shot. You know, yesterday they could easily, if Lukaku is a bit more on his toes instead of on his heels in the first half, Chelsea could easily be 2-0 up at halftime. And that, and the Ziyech to mount ball in the half space is too easy for Chelsea to put in. And it took Conte, and to be fair, the team, 40 minutes to say, hey, Højbjerg, what are you doing? You can't let Mount just run in behind like this all the time. And Ziyech just ping the ball to him all the time.
I think Højbjerg is the least of Conte's problems right now. But it says a lot that is somebody
exactly.
you call out.
Exactly.
I think realistically,
they can finish top four, but they have to get the points somewhere else.
I think they're likely to finish top four. I'll go as far as that, because when you look at the opposition, I mean, it's Arsenal now falling away.
Yeah.
West Ham, obviously, that was a big defeat for them. You know, he does that, he's going to come knocking. He's going to come knocking on Levy's door. You know that. But I think even if they don't finish top four, at a minimum, I think they're going to need some help at the back, because Romero remains a question mark of what condition he's in when he comes back, whether he can contribute. Tanganga, I don't need to see Tanganga in a back three anymore. I think, you know.
Consider something about Sanchez.
Or Tanganga right back. Well, Sanchez.
Oh, no. There's that moment Sanchez in the first half, listen to me, where he has all the time in the world. And I'm sure the boys around him said that he's shout time. And he kicks the ball out. Literally on the King's Road, and Conte goes absolutely ballistic on like, but what, and turns around to his bench, what is he doing? What's this like? And that's Davinson Sanchez for you, who has qualities, of course, but I don't think enough for a Conte team, even in a back three.
We touched upon midfield. I think Paratici, from the moment he arrived, he's been laser focused on getting Frank Kessie from Milan, one way or another. I think it's been widely reported. Obviously, Kessie's contract is up in June. My question to you, though, is my understanding is Kessie from Milan wants 8 million euros net. I'm going to try to do some quick math in my head, so bear with me. 8 million euros net works out to, say, 7 million pounds net. Multiply, its top tax rate is 45% here, so you're looking at about 13.5 million pounds a year, which is, you know, it's in the region of 240, 250.
Yeah.
It's a lot of money for Tottenham. That is a ton of money. If he's going to want the same money. And I think this is what makes it difficult for Spurs. You would think it's a no-brainer, right? But at that point, if I'm Kessie, I say, you know, I'm not going to get that money from Milan. How much less am I willing to take?
Yeah. But they have to qualify for the Champions League. Kessie is not going to go. Because there will be other clubs like PSG, like maybe other English clubs who are in for him.
Would he be a good fit in Manchester United? I don't know if United scouts know who he is, but I mean,
100%. I think he'd be a fit in a lot of clubs who will be in the Champions League, who will have the money to spend that on wages easily, in the sense like this is, I suppose he would be like as high as Harry Kane. I'm not sure how much of a...
He'd be right behind Harry Kane.
Yeah, basically. So the wage, you know, in terms of wage bill structure, they might not want to bring him in on that money. Look at what happened with Ndombele, who was on 200 a week. And that created a lot of tensions within the dressing room when he signed that deal. So they might not be ready for that. And I think there will be other clubs where maybe Kessié feels it's more interesting for me to go to. But they need more ballers in midfield. I'm sorry. I like Winks. He's a nice guy. Skip is a nice guy. Højbjerg is a nice guy. They can't pass the ball in the way Conte would want a midfielder to pass the ball. So they would need someone like that.
What do we make of the lineup and the fact that he left out? Okay, I appreciate you want to be defensive. You want to go on the counter, right?
Yeah.
But given what Doherty and I think Sessegnon, I think there's still a player there, and eventually you can get to him. He's obviously been unlucky, whatever. Yeah. But it seemed to me it was a conscious decision to play those two ahead of Reguilón and Emerson.
Yeah, completely.
And as I alluded to earlier, I think he just wanted to give Tuchel a different look, something Tuchel wasn't expecting. From Tuchel's perspective, we both talked about how this setup certainly helps Ziyech because he doesn't have to worry. I mean, we can call it Azpilicueta and Malang at this stage of his career is a center back, and Malang Sarr is a center back.
Yeah, yeah, true.
And so you know, it's like watching France. Right?
Well, yeah, exactly. That's how we won the World Cup. Because Sarr, at least Azpilicueta goes forward a little bit more. But Sarr was a third centre back. He never overlapped on Osonodoy. Right. He was literally, I give the ball to Osonodoy and then I stay on the halfway line.
And you have that nice pace with Hudson-Odoi.
Tell me something quickly.
Yeah.
Why is Osonodoy waiting half an hour on the one-on-one with Tanganga to go on the outside? Every time in the first half an hour, he got the ball and went inside into the pitch, which is very easy for the defender and Tanganga to defend. The first time he went on the outside, Tanganga fouled him. It was a yellow card. And it could have been a red because not long after, he did the same again. Tanganga pushed the shirt, stops him again, and that could easily maybe have been a second yellow. Why not doing... If you do it after 5 minutes and Tanganga gets a yellow, he will not defend the same way every time you go on the outside after that. I didn't get it at all.
That's a really good point, and I think that comes from I missed that during the game, although I did notice that Hudson-Odoi was coming inside a lot. And look, maybe he's coming inside to try to play 1-2 with Lukaku, but I also think mix it up a little bit, you know.
Yeah,
go outside. You're saying you want to give us the middle, fine, right? I like my chance, you know. Lukaku against Dier, yeah, Dier's good in the air, but guess what, so is Lukaku. You know, he's a big boy. I think those are the things. I think maybe they're so accustomed to the wing backs delivering those crosses.
You're right. And overlapping. So you go inside, so you leave the space for the...
And it goes back to what we would say, right? I don't know how often Tuchel practiced this setup in training, but probably very, very little because he simply has got few games to play.
Yeah, Silva said, which was interesting, he said, you know, we've played he said 5 more games than Liverpool, 6 than City.
Oh, he read the Chelsea program, which made sure to list all the games that they played.
In the last 6 weeks or whatever, he said we played 11 games in 30 days. This is mental. But he said, but the big difference with this one is that we had 4 days to prepare for it, which I didn't check if when they played their previous games, which was maybe Tuesday. So then what, Tuesday to Sunday?
It would have been
Sunday?
Tuesday. Yeah.
And he said, I promise you, that made a big difference because the preparations for this game were spot on in what we wanted to do. So maybe they had a bit more time to prepare than they had the last 6 weeks. I don't know, but that's something he said.
My last point on Chelsea is he's moved to the back four. What happened? The Champions League is starting in mid-February, right?
Yeah.
It seems to me a little bit, Chalobah was on the bench, he's on his way back, and obviously Christensen is out.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking, from like the team planning, team construction perspective, you play 3-4-2-1, you win a Champions League, you're all geared towards that. We know the reasons about why they, you know, we've talked about it, why they maybe aren't doing as well as you would have hoped. But I'm wondering, what does he do now? Because you can't build a squad where all of a sudden Chalobah, who'd been on loan at, you know, Reading or some team like that, or Huddersfield or whatever last season, right? He gets injured, and then Christensen, who's on an expiring contract, is out, and then all of a sudden, no, we can't play back three anymore. And obviously, you've got the injuries to the wing backs. Well, what is he thinking? What
do you think? So, what's yesterday
he gonna do?
Was so that's the second game in a row now, I think, they play like that. Well, certainly this felt more like a 4-1-4-1, more than the 4 kind of 2-2-2 or 4-4-2 maybe, because I thought Kovacic and Mount were very often on the same line, and Jorginho clearly.
And you can do that with Conte, by the way, in that position too, because you got Conte to play opposition playmaker. Yeah.
Do you think he's to help Lukaku? Do you think they've made those changes maybe to try to put him? And to be fair, again, I know he didn't score. I thought he was good and he was a nuisance and all of that. There's two crosses by Mount, I think, in the first half. The first one where it's over on the right foot, sort of half volley, it's over the bar. The second one that he misses completely. That could easily have been two goals. So I did wonder, maybe they're trying something different to see if that's better for Lukaku, that accommodates him better, integrates him better, you create more chances for him. And that's the reason why maybe I thought they changed the formation.
I think he's definitely coming around to that idea of the 4-1-4-1 to try to get more from Lukaku. Also, as we said, this suits Ziyech, it suits Hudson-Odoi. I think it suits Pulisic when he's available.
Mount is good in that position. Mount loves those runs.
It helps Mount too, because you know, he doesn't, he's got somebody with him, right?
Yeah.
He people aren't just keying in on him. Kovacic has got no issue playing there, and we said Conte can play there too. Where you run into problems is obviously what happens, A, Jorginho, right, if the back four sit, it's not so much of a problem, but still, it's only Jorginho there. Right? Can Kovacic go and play that role? I don't think so. I don't know.
Yeah.
So that's, I think... true.
It's the mobility of Jorginho. Yeah, and you saw that on the Thiago Silva yellow card on Bergwijn, where they were done and Bergwijn was going. And
yeah. So potentially there's an issue there. I think there's you still have an issue with defenders because, yeah, I can ask Azpilicueta and Sarr to play wide. Do I want Rudiger playing wide?
Yeah.
I mean, Christensen's done it before yonks ago. Can he do it now, assuming he comes back? Can Chalaba do it? Nice. You know, it's weird, right? Four center backs, right? And also Azpilicueta is getting older and is also still a free agent, unless he signed his contract in the last couple of days. So it's an interesting one. I think we may see more of this look, though, in the Champions League, at least in the shorter term, because I think it makes more sense for his attacking players right now
and
without
also,
going backs.
I think they had one clean sheet in the last 11. It's also a way of being maybe more solid defensively. And yeah, you won't get Sarr bombing up and down the left-hand side, and Azpilicueta maybe a little bit more, but at least maybe you feel that the solidity is there, and maybe it's no surprise they didn't concede in that game.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, more than enough Spurs. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Real Madrid have to huff and puff to come back from two goals down at home to little Elche as your boy Karim Benzema misses a penalty before coming off injured. And Jules, Eder Militao is the new Sergio Ramos injury time winner.
Well, I wish for Eder Militao that he scores as many goals in his Real Madrid career than Sergio Ramos
Maybe
did.
Maybe a bit fewer red cards.
And fewer red cards, for sure. And to be fair, Real Madrid had loads of chances. Let's be clear here. Edgar Badia in goal made loads of saves. They hit the woodwork as well. Benzema missed the penalty. His first one in 17 attempts or 18 attempts since he joined Real Madrid, by the way. It could have easily been a game that they would have won. Carlito was not happy in the end, and you can understand why, because they almost lost it as well.
Modric apparently took the penalty they got later, and apparently it was the first one for Real Madrid.
I thought
I said, oh yeah, that Cristiano Ronaldo fella was there for a long time.
Exactly. It was either him or Karim. And I think in the end, the damage is not too high because Sevilla lost as well. And
they drew.
Because Sevilla drew, of course, and dropped some points. That's what I wanted to say, like you did. So it's not too bad. But you need to score those chances. That's the thing.
Yeah, and I actually saw some good things from Eden Hazard as well.
Yeah, we started on the right-hand side. That draw, Gab, stings a little less, as we were just explaining, for Real Madrid, because Sevilla failed to beat Celta Vigo at home on Saturday, and in fact, they needed a two-goal comeback of their own.
Yeah, and look, I think this is good. I mean, obviously, it would have been better to get all 3 points.
Yeah.
But the fight that they showed, they believe.
That
second
half,
and they came close to winning as well. And, you know, Papu Gomez comes on and scores, I thought, made all the difference. Sevilla aren't going away. And, you know, the gap is what it is. They got the head-to-head. I'm not saying you need to believe they're going to win the title, but put it this way, Hay Liga.
Yeah.
Manchester City are held away to Southampton 1-1, ending a run of 12 consecutive Premier League wins. Jules, it had to happen at some point, right?
Yeah, it did. It almost happened at Arsenal on January the 1st.
It did.
And this was, it felt, especially in the first half, a quite similar game. I thought they started slow. They were not really into the game. I thought the pace of their game the ball movement was a bit slow. If Sterling scores that huge chance that he has, of course, it might be different. And Walker Peters scores a goal that he will never score again in his whole life. But this is what happens. And then they came back on set piece again, and Laporte. The game could have gone their way, of course. It could have. They could have had a penalty, I think, on De Bruyne. Armstrong should have been sent off every single day of the year. They'll take the point. They still were clear of Liverpool anyway. But I think they have to be careful in those first halves when they don't start well.
I give some props to Hasenhüttl here because he did something, you know, he went way defensive, but then played the two strikers, chucked everybody on the counter, played with the usual intensity. By the way, Armando Broja, player and a half,
he's
that
a
guy.
Player for sure.
Good news for Chelsea.
Yeah. Liverpool closed 2 points back because of that City draw as they win 3-1 away at Crystal Palace. But Gab, our boy Patrick Vieira is no friend with the referee, Kevin.
Ah, I see what you're there.
Yeah, nice. Getting
Okay. So,
I mean, come on.
Look, I don't want to pick on referees.
No,
whatever,
please do.
We said it
please
before.
Do, right? This weekend was terrible.
The talent pool is not deep. And I hate people say, "Oh, referees as a whole." Okay, there are some very good referees
not
in
many.
The Premier League.
Not many.
There are some who may grow into it, and there are some who are not good. Kevin Friend belongs in the not good.
He's
category.
Not good at all.
The Jota thing at the end, I don't know.
This is crazy.
All right, he's obviously far behind the play, but, you know, you've got VAR. You see it. You see that it's not a penalty. It's very, very simple.
Yeah.
Very simple. Whether VAR refers you or not, you see it's not a penalty. Never. The Firmino one, slightly more complicated. I think this is more on the VAR. For those who didn't see it, Firmino is standing in an offside position when the cross comes in. Now, he doesn't touch the ball. He certainly looks like he's jumping for the ball. The defender behind him, evidently not realizing he's offside or not being sure or whatever, and you don't blame him for him, I think it was Mitchell, takes a step forward. That leaves Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain wide open. So the question is, was Firmino interfering with play, even though he doesn't touch the ball? And I think the answer, very obviously, is yes. I'm guessing it's some kind of weird VAR interpretation of VAR. So, ooh, are you standing offside? I kind of can, you know, is it up to me to interpret it? The referee? Yeah, it's up to you and the referee. Show the referee, let the referee judge if he's interfering or not. Simple as.
Yeah.
Milan and Juventus play out a 0-0 draw on a horrible San Siro pitch, partly because Inter played there the day before. It's so demented. I mean, and the pitch of San Siro is
always bad. But since when the two teams can play the same weekend on the same pitch? This never happens. It's usually one away, one at home.
It's crazy. I think they're doing this on purpose so that they can build a new stadium.
Yeah.
Jules, Allegri says he's happy nonetheless because the unbeaten streak goes on.
Yeah, 9 games.
Is that part of the problem?
For surely, Gab, it must be. I was watching on in front of my TV saying, okay, now, okay, I can understand this. You start and you're cautious and, you know, you know the pitch is bad, but you're in good shape and everything. And then you think, okay, throw on Kulusevski earlier and all of that and go for it.
But that would mean you want to win. You don't. You just want to avoid defeat.
Clearly, they wanted to avoid defeat. I think my Manion was watching a show from Thursday in goal because he had so little to do in the whole game. I was very disappointed. But hey, 9 games, unbeaten run continues. They didn't lose, didn't concede a goal. Chesney had a couple of good saves to make. But
Milan started well and then really tailed off badly the second half.
And sticking with Juve, all of a sudden they're strongly linked with Dusan Vlahovic, Gab, who's left out of Fiorentina 1-1 draw with Cagliari. This won't go away.
No, and I think it's kind of ominous that he was left out of the draw of the game against Cagliari. Could Juve use Vlahovic? Sure. We've been through the situation 18 months ago. Fiorentina wants 70 million. I don't know where Juve are going to find 70 million.
Surely they don't have that money.
They'd have to sell, you know, whatever they can sell. I mean, the saleable assets at Juve, there's very, very few of them, right? If you're not going to sell Locatelli in De Ligt, you got to hope somebody likes, you're not going to sell injured Chiesa. I mean, the humiliation of losing a player to Juve again would be enormous and mind blowing. I think Vlahovic would make a lot of sense for Juve. I think if you're Fiorentina, though, you know, hang in there. Hang in there and go for top four. You've just spent money. And also, people are talking Kulusevski in part exchange. They just signed Ikone. How many wingers do they need? They have Ikone, they have Nico. No.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes!
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Bayern beat up Hertha 4-1 away. And guess what? Robert Lewandowski does not score. These days, that's new, Jules.
It is news. They destroyed them. He could have scored, to be fair. They had so many chances. And what I love is the 3-2-4-1 formation. Now he came out from that Nagelsmann's Hoffenheim days, bringing it, you know, you want to play Gnabry and Sané and Coman.
Sané through the middle. I like that.
And Lewandowski all together. Here we go.
And the best thing is Pavard and Lucas Hernandez, those two fullback impersonators, both in the back three.
I think we might see this again. I wonder if that formation is there to stay. A late leg Frankie de Jong goal helps Barcelona win away to Alaves. Gab, this was huge for Xavi.
It was huge. It was not good. Not a good performance.
Not good at all. But the goal is great.
A nice goal, but it came late, I think 87th minute. Yeah. Luke de Jong had a couple chances. I think it was pretty
bad. De Jong. It was bad de Jong again.
It was not the best day for him. Pedri is back again. I think it was his first start since like week two of the season. Like he can't do it. It's crazy all of a sudden. Oh, Pedri's going to change them. The man is still 19 years old. Yeah. He's a kid. Yeah. Not a good performance. You can see where they want to go, but you can also see how far away they are. And look, it's baby steps.
Yeah.
Paris Saint-Germain beat up Rennes 4-0. No goals for Mbappe. No goals for Lionel Messi, who came on as a sub. But you don't need them.
When
you have Marco Verratti and Sergio Ramos opening his Paris Saint-Germain account.
Yeah, well done for Sergio Ramos. His first start since the Saint-Etienne game away from home back before Christmas.
Was that the one where he got sent off?
That's when Messi had the hat-trick of assist. And the front page of L'Equipe on Monday morning, Marco van Basten for the 2 goals by Verratti. I mean, how genius is this?
That's very original.
I love it.
His name is Marco. His last name starts with a V. Van Basten. Yeah.
Okay. Marcus Rashford comes on and scores a late winner for Manchester United against West Ham at Old Trafford to send Ralf Rangnick back into fourth place. Gab, the right substitutions for our German friend, including Anthony Martial.
You're big on your substitutions.
I love Martial.
What I liked about this is at the end, you know, like this is something Mourinho used to do, Real Madrid used to do back in the 80s. Like, oh no, we need a result. Let's just send on more and more forwards. They finished the game with Cristiano, Edinson Cavani, Marcus Rashford, Martial, if you want to count him as a striker, and Bruno, all on the pitch at the same time. Yeah. And look, if Gerard Bowen doesn't miscontrol it, and Bowen, I'm not having to go with
him,
right?
It's not good that West Ham should concede.
Then they don't score. But look, Rashford gets the late goal. It's a big lift. It's a lift for Rashford. Everybody's happy.
Yeah.
I think, actually, this was very analytical from Rangnick, because he said, you know what? If we lose here, if we draw, it's going to feel like a defeat.
Yeah.
If we lose, it's one fewer point. Doesn't really make that much of a difference for us. Obviously, West Ham move forward, but I don't believe West Ham are going to be around at the end. But if we win, we get this massive lift. And so he played the percentages and it worked.
It's still worrying how poor they were with the ball during that game, though.
Speaking of United, The Athletic are reporting that they're going to sound out these four men for the permanent manager position.
Yeah.
Mauricio Pochettino, Julian Lopetegui, Eric Ten Hag, and Luis Enrique. Funny enough, four guys were all at a job right now.
Exactly, which is going to make it even harder, I think, for United to try to poach one of them. I still think Pochettino and Ten Hag are the two front runners, depending on who you prefer. I think there are people at the club who love Poch more than Ten Hag, and others who prefer Ten Hag, I think, including Rangnick. But we see Lopetegui, I'm all for it. And Luis Enrique, as everybody knows, we are big fans. So
he wants to win the World Cup, I think.
Probably, more likely.
Lopetegui, much as I like him, I don't know. That means also then getting bet into a certain group of agents. Ten Hag, I don't know. Great job at Ajax. But it's so different from what he's going to have at United. So different.
Why not? He can take it. He can take it on.
Yeah, we've said that about United managers in the past.
Right. I would be curious to see Pochettino there as well. Big win for Borussia Dortmund away to Hoffenheim. Gab, are you still going to be mean about my boy, Daniel Malen, who had a hat-trick of assists, was unplayable on Saturday?
I don't know if you get an assist when you put in a cross that the defender
turns. Of course it is.
That's all right. So then it is three assists for him. 3-2 win. Look, it helps when Daniel Malen is played as a winger.
True.
Not as a, like, in you play 4-3-3, as in, like, pretendo, like, second striker.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Nonsense.
I agree with you.
It also helps when you've got Erling Haaland to finish, and it helps when you've got, you know, my man Marco Reus on fire again.
Of course.
Defensively, usual issues, but again, hey. You know, that's old news. Nice to see Akanji back. At least he's got wheels.
Yeah.
Another epic comeback in La Liga as Atletico Madrid scored twice after minute 89 to turn it around and beat Valencia 3-2. Jules, at one point, this was very ugly for El Cholo. When he takes off João Félix, he gets booed.
Yeah, booed badly. I mean, I've said it many times on the show, Gab. There's something with their first halves. There is something where they're just not into the game. And it was the same case against Valencia, where they were 2-0 down. They were playing so badly. It was ridiculous, collectively and individually. Then Correa comes on at halftime. The goal that you score early in the second half, Cunha goal, and then I think you see the momentum shifting.
And it's a siege of Valencia.
Yunus Musa, by the way, great goal. The Amoso goal is great. It's just, again, I don't think he's good enough overall from Atleti, even if this time they got away with it. Inter get the job done against Venezia thanks to a large-ish winner from Edin Dzeko to stay top in Serie A. And my boy Thomas Henry, because he's French, has now scored more goals than his uncle Thierry Henry. I love that guy.
By the way, they're not really related, as far as I know. And he's not related to the other Henri, the French women's player.
But well done for him. Thomas, he's doing a great job.
I just love that. Whether it's like the other Henri. Not a good first half for Inter. Turned around afterwards, created a lot of chances. I think they deserve to win. Big goal for Dzeko. I hadn't scored in a while.
Yeah.
Arsenal are held at home by Burnley. 0-0. Jewel, this wasn't good. And fourth place looks further and further away. And Kieran Tierney has an ouchie.
Shall we move on? I mean, you know what the biggest thing from that game is? I think that Bukayo Saka starts to get really tired, and I don't understand why you keep playing him and playing him and playing him and playing him again. I think he needs a bit of a break, which is good because there's a break coming. Of course, I just thought this was so poor from Arsenal. Even if they could have won, I think the expected goals is 1.6 or 1.7. It's still not enough, I think. Speaking of Arsenal, new details have emerged over that investigation into suspicious betting patterns and spot betting, involving a player who got a yellow card on purpose, apparently.
And now we know who the player is. Well, I think most of us knew before. But, you know, the scary lawyers who I don't like says, you can't name him. Okay, good. Now I'm going to name him. His name is Granit Xhaka. He's the former captain of Arsenal. Maybe he still is captain. I don't know. It's a weird club. So
weird club.
For those who don't know about spot betting, is you can actually go and bet during a game on individual events, including when a player might get a yellow card.
Yes.
Bookmakers look at this because it's obviously something that's very easy to fix potentially. So there's bookmakers, people look at markets, they look for suspicious movements of money. Somebody bet £52,000 that Xhaka was going to pick up a yellow card when he did.
Yeah.
I think they were 4-0 up against Leeds United, something like that, 10 minutes to go. And he gets a yellow card for time wasting, that sets off alarm bells. Now, obviously, no suggestions on anything wrong, but whatever. But people have to go and investigate. And I'll tell you what, this is not a good look for Granit Xhaka. It's one more thing to worry about for Arsenal. Jules, we'll obviously wait for the investigation and we'll see what happens. And you reminded me that the reason we were talking before about how Arsenal were poor in this game, I thought maybe part of it was you have to play 4-1-4-1, and you only have one midfielder left because El Neni's away and Partey's
suspended.
Partey's suspended. That's right. I completely forgot about that.
He came on against Liverpool.
Granit Xhaka, of course. He's also suspended.
Suspended as well.
For record, against the Forest game.
The Nottingham Forest game.
I have to ask about this guy because his contract was expiring. Mourinho wanted him at Roma, apparently, over the summer. Let him go. Bye-bye, Granit. In fact, you can say it in three languages. The man's Swiss. He probably speaks like... seriously, I was thinking about this, right? You could have said au revoir. You could have said tschüss. You could have said ciao. You could have said whatever it is in Romance.
I think they would have. They just could not find an agreement, I think, that suited Arsenal for the transfer fee. They wanted more money than what Roma were ready to offer.
How about you just take what he offers rather than have this guy hanging around? Seriously, I don't think there's an Arsenal player. Well, maybe Alba is challenging him. Alba, another former captain, challenging him for this now. Another former player who gets more criticism from Arsenal fans.
I can see the leadership. I see those qualities 100%. I can see that. I can see that at times when he passes the ball forward, there's something there. And that he's left-footed, which you need. I think Arteta sees it as something important.
He seems to be the only club in the world where people obsess over the left-footed central midfielder.
But no, trust me, it's not the only club.
But what are you talking about? It's such an issue. Well, with Lokonga's there on his own.
I know.
This is why I'm always stop a little short of criticizing Arteta even when Arsenal play badly, because I figure, what kind of a madhouse is he in with these players?
I know. It's difficult building a proper squad. Trust me.
Let's go. I want to say let's move on.
Yeah, let's.
But no, let's talk about Albion again.
Oh God, yeah.
Anyway, he wasn't there for Arsenal, and he wasn't there for Gabon either.
No. Nope.
Neither was Mario Lemina. Jules, now despite going down to 10 men, Gabon got a last-ditch equalizer against Burkina Faso. It looked like the momentum had shifted. Yeah. But no, penalties.
Yeah, Kwele Manga scored that goal. And to be fair, when they equalized, I thought, okay, this is it. They're going to go and win it. Even in the penalty shootout, I thought they were going to win it. And then Burkina Faso, and somehow, I think, found the resources of staying in the game, wait for the penalties, and making sure that their goalkeeper made the difference.
I love the Burkina Faso goalkeeper. I watched this. He's got
in the Lev Yashin, all black.
He's all in black. Yeah. He's got the black gloves. His gloves don't look. I mean, I'm sure they are football gloves, but they look like gloves you'd wear outside when it's cold. While his teammates taking the penalty, you know, most people crouch down or they squat. The goalkeepers, no, he was doing this thing. He was like on all fours, like a cat.
I love that.
What a character that guy is. Well done, Burkina Faso. And by the way, on a less pleasant note, obviously there's issues going on in Burkina Faso and Ouagadougou.
That's true.
Reports of a possible military coup, reports of violence. Just hope everybody's safe.
And Gab, we were so hot on Nigeria in the last show after they won all their three group games. And guess what? They got knocked out by COVID-hit Tunisia, who had been poor in group stages, had 7 players out for that game against Nigeria, and yet find a way of winning it 1-0.
Now, I blame your sartorial choices here, because in the last one, you wore the Ghana shirt as the Black Stars got knocked out.
I know.
Now this, I'm
wearing the Nigeria 94 shirt. I'd planned all the shirts I was wearing through the competition.
Don't tell us who's next, because that could impact betting markets.
I didn't think Nigeria would lose to Tunisia as much as I love Tunisia and Wabi Kajri and all the team. They didn't even have their head coach on the bench because of COVID, and yet they benefited from a big mistake by the Nigerian goalkeeper and Scani's goal. But still, they were so solid, so well organized.
And Alexi will be coming on and getting sent off.
Sadiq missing that big chance at the end too. It was not a good day for Nigeria.
Bayer Leverkusen destroyed Augsburg 5-1 to stay third. I see what I did there.
Yes.
Patrick Schick doesn't score,
nope.
But your boy Moussa Diaby does. It's a hat-trick.
Yes. It's a hat-trick. He hadn't scored since early November, I think he was. Well done. He was on fire. He was involved in the first goal by Bellarabi too. Really good. I like this Leverkusen team. We said our friend Gerardo.
Rico
Suave. Really, so well done to them. Napoli moved to second in Serie A, beating Salernitana 4-1. Gab, goals for the little guys, Mertens and Insigne. Insigne, by the way, 115, which is level with Diego.
Yeah, which, okay.
You never really equalized Diego.
Let's not even mention this, because,
still,
you know, it's a different era, different time. Dries Mertens, though, it's really funny. His contract expires, like Insigne's. Unlike Insigne, he's not, you know, skipping town to go to MLS. He wants to stay, and he even came out.
Yeah, I saw the interview.
He's about to become a dad again, and he says, you know, a little boy when he's born, like he said, I'll name him Chiro, which is Mertens' nickname. It's a very typical Neapolitan name, and I'll include him in the contract. In a couple of years, no doubt, he'll be ready, but it's very sweet.
Imagine Chiro Mertens playing for Napoli later.
Listen, I love players who leave money on the table and say, like, you know what, I like it here, I'm going to stay.
I agree. Hometown discount.
Okay. And this is his hometown now.
Yeah.
Ajax leap back to the top of the Eredivisie, beating PSV Eindhoven 2-1. Jules, this was a big win. This is going to flip-flop back and forth all season long.
Yeah, it was, although they won the reverse fixture earlier in the season 5-0 in Amsterdam. This one, and between those two games, they dropped a few points, had a few draws, and that's how PSV went back onto the top. Ajax were the best team. Brian Brobby, who came back.
The human bowling ball,
yeah,
Brian Brobby.
Who came back from Leipzig. Remember, he left to go, came back with a really good goal. Then Mario Götze, who's been doing so great. over there at PSV, scoring to make it 1-1, and then Mazraoui with the second goal, lovely goal too. I thought Ajax were great. I thought this was a really good game. They're both still in Europe. I really hope they do well in the Champions League and in the Europa League. And I think that was a really great publicity for the Eredivisie overall. So much for Jose Mourinho being defensive, Gab, because his Roma team scored 4 first half goals against Empoli. Tammy Abraham bags another 2. That's I think 10 now in the league.
Yeah, and Sergio Oliveira looking really good impact. As well. Huge impact. Jose Mourinho vindicated against the haters. Although it's funny, people now are pointing out, wait a minute, Jose, you keep telling us how terrible this team is, how terrible your players are, how you can't do anything. But then you go out and you play like this and you score 4 goals in a single half. Which one is it? Poor Mourinho can't win, can he?
He can't win.
But big win for them.
Yeah, big win.
Now, back when I was growing up, Jules, Olympique Lyonnais against Saint-Étienne was the big derby in Ligue 1.
Yes.
Not so much anymore because, let's face it, Saint-Étienne aren't particularly good and Lyon have Peter Boss.
Yeah, and they were not good either. And they won the 124th Rhône derby, and this was terrible. This was one of the worst derbies I've seen. Well, okay, there was no fans or 5,000 of them, which I think takes a lot away from the intensity that you usually have in a game like this. But the level and the quality of both teams, including the Lyon team with Guimaraes, with Aouar, with Paqueta, was just terrible. I mean, Peter Bosch, I don't know what Peter Bosch does all week. No, I really don't know, Gab, because there's nothing. Right. They're not even trying anything. It's terrible. I don't know.
Can I just ask a quick bonus question? Let's leave Peter Bosch to one side. But one of the things about French football is that historically, it wasn't big city football, right? Paris Saint-Germain, of course, Paris didn't even have a proper football team until the early 70s. Marseille had their moments, but you had teams like Auxerre, like Montpellier doing well. And Saint-Étienne were, Nancy, of course, back in the day.
Yeah,
Nantes as well, I think, also won the title. So you have all these smaller cities winning. Saint-Étienne were one of those smaller cities. They had this big, right? I mean, Lyon is about, what, like 5 times as big as Saint-Étienne?
Yeah, easily, yeah. If not more.
That's all part of the past now. Like the whole provincial cities competing.
Harder.
It's much harder around Europe, even in France. Yeah,
yeah, for sure. Atalanta and Lazio played to a 0-0 draw. But Gab, was this really Atalanta playing?
I don't know. When I look at I look at the team. I know when there's players. You look at the squad list, right? There's guys on the youth team playing that you haven't heard of or you've never seen play before, right? Now there's people in the lineup who I've never seen play before. I mean, look, credit to Atalanta. They put out a team. Gasperini said, like, well, we've got a youth academy, whatever. We're not going to use COVID as an excuse for dubious postponements. I think it's Lazio who should be kicking themselves because Atalanta were there for the taking.
Right,
could have made a big difference, but it's a huge point for them. They stay just ahead of Juve.
Yeah.
Everton lose at home to Aston Villa, and there are ugly scenes as Luca Dean and Matty Cash are struck by objects thrown from the crowd. By the way, we didn't mention this before, but Antonio Rudiger also struck by objects from the crowd. Bill Kenwright, for those who don't know, he's one of those figures who's been at the club forever through different ownership groups. He's also roundly abused. And we have a new name in the Everton manager bingo, Vitor Pereira. Jules, he's been around the block.
Yeah, we've seen him a few times, especially with Porto.
It was a long time ago. He was at Olympiacos. He went to Fenerbahce.
He did a good job there, Fenerbahce.
He's been in Asia. He's been in China. He's been in the Gulf.
This is not the profile I would go for, but maybe they've got a different view on this. I don't think he's a builder. And I think right now this is what you need at this club, someone who would stay for long. And Vitor Pereira never stays long at clubs anyway. So I don't know why you think he could do that at your club. I'm very surprised if it's him. I was very surprised by the bottle thrown at Luca Ding. And maybe it was because he left Everton to go to Villa and obviously created the first goal by Buendia. And it happened just after that goal. This is, again, we've seen a lot of it in France, and we're starting to see more and more in England. You mentioned Rudiger. We saw Rodri at Arsenal, pelted with things too. Nothing hit him, but still. I just don't think it's a good thing at all.
You're surprised by these things. I'm assuming you're not surprised by the abuse directed at Bill Kenwright.
No, although, how much does he do in this club? Still, is he really involved? Is he making big calls?
I think the idea is whether, for me at least, right? So Bill Kenwright's always said, oh, look, I'm a theater guy. I don't have money. Yeah. I don't have a lot of money, but I hook up with rich people so that we can run the club, right? And he did it before with the previous owners. Now with Farhad Moshiri.
there's still just so many questions around Everton's ownership. You know, people have questioned, BBC questioned whether, is this Moshiri's money or is
Usmanov,
this or is this Alisher Usmanov, you know?
But
and so my thinking is, if you love the club so much, right? If you're Bill Kenwright, and look, he's older now. He's obviously, he doesn't need to have abuse, right? Why not be more transparent about what's going on, right? Or say, I'm just going to be a fan. I don't need this abuse.
Is it expensive to get rid of him? Because I was trying to think, why don't they do that? It would certainly appease a bit of the anger by some of the fans, clearly. So unless it's difficult to sack him, I don't understand why they don't let him go.
Fine.
I really don't. Speaking of Aston Villa, Gab, they've been linked to Rodrigo Betancourt. Would that be a good idea?
I mean, again, you're talking about a project.
Yeah.
You're talking about a guy who's going to be on big wages. He's still young enough. He can make a difference. I talked about Juve's saleable assets, right? If you assume that there are some that they do not want to get rid of, like De Ligt and Locatelli, he goes in the category with Kulusevski of, you know, they're young enough, make it some money back.
They have high value.
I think he's a better rounded. I think, you know, if he comes in, he would come in to for the Douglas Luiz role. I think he's probably better rounded than Douglas Luiz, a better passer.
I love
also
Douglas
on bigger Luiz. Wages. But also somebody who's just really had a very bad time over the last 6 months. So
definitely.
It would be a project. Comoros' game against Cameroon kicks off in a few hours. Jules, according to the reports, until yesterday, they were without a keeper because Salim Benboina got injured against Ghana. The other two had tested positive for COVID. Since then, one of them has tested negative, so we really will play, but there's no keeper on the bench. Apparently, they said, we'll have... They didn't even say who it was, but, we've been practicing with an outfield player in goal. He's pretty good. I know, Comoros, fantastic. A million people. It's fantastic. Great story. But this shouldn't be happening in a major tournament, right? They should have some safeguard where...
Yeah, it shouldn't. They could call an emergency keeper to come in or, I don't know, something
even
like that.
Even if you're not going to allow that, you know how in the NFL... During COVID, they had the COVID quarterback who was just kept separate in his own bubble.
That's true.
Why not keep your third keeper away from everybody else and train by himself?
They were quite suspicious over the positive test, by the way, done in Cameroon before playing against Cameroon. I don't know, but it turned out that Ali Amada, the former Toulouse goalkeeper, is actually okay now, testing negative, so he's going to play the game. And maybe they will use that for adversity, you know, saying, look, again, we were almost written off, or it looked like we could not win this game, and now we can be back exactly like they did to qualify for the last 16. It would be incredible. Imagine beating Cameroon in Cameroon. That would be extraordinary.
Listeners, this to me suggests that the next shirt that he's going to wear is the Cameroon
shirt. I've already worn Cameroon, but, you know, who knows? Maybe not. Staying with COVID, the Premier League has reportedly agreed to a new protocol for postponements. Gab, we mentioned that on Thursday's show. Instead of doing it based on who is available, they would do it on who's tested negative or positive.
And shouldn't just do it over who's tested positive, but also who has to self-isolate, I would hope.
Yeah.
This is such a mess because apparently making this a rule would mean changing the rules in mid-seasons, which would require an enormous amount of support from the 20 clubs. You're not sure they have it. Maybe it only takes 14 votes to change the guidance and stuff. Why is this so complicated? Why were you so stupid before in the way you did it, which allowed, let's face it, some teams game the system. They're not gaming the system. Those are the rules, right? If it's more than four cases, that sounds reasonable. You still look at it case by case.
Just be
transparent.
Should.
Just enough of this privacy nonsense. Oh, we have to keep these names. No, you don't. You really don't. Really don't. Go and challenge these freaking lawyers. Go and challenge them. Just, you know, I want to see who is the person who's like, I'm suing the Premier League because they revealed that I had COVID. Seriously? Come on, man. Khira Hamraoui is back playing for Paris Saint-Germain. Though, Jules, we still don't know what happened in the inquiry and what's behind it.
No.
It's good to see that she's fit, yeah?
Yeah, and she played. And she played well, I thought, in the game against Saint-Étienne away. Although the atmosphere between her and some of the girls doesn't look great. I mean, she played with Diallo, who obviously was questioned by the police. When PSG scored, she kind of went for the hugs and the huddles, and she was left a bit cold by the rest, especially by Katoto and Diani, whose agent have the same agent, who's also been interviewed by the police on that case. So,
the third player in the car? Or
No. That was Kashraoui, I think, who actually was with Hamraoui. It looks, Gab, like it looked watching the game. It looked like some of the girls in the team didn't really, were not happy that Amrari was back playing with them. Others looked more happy and kind of like were helping her almost. I don't know, it felt strange. Maybe it's just me watching on television, but it felt a bit strange. I don't know, we will see. She's going to play, you would think, in the big game against Lyon in the French Cup at the weekend. But maybe it's normal that you still have some tension left from that whole story that really, I think, broke the dressing room at the club at the time.
No time frame on the inquiry.
No, or, we don't know more. We don't know more at all. Milan's Rafael Leao lost his appeal in the Lisbon court over his departure from Sporting back in the summer 2018 when he moved to Lille. This is a really interesting story because we knew in France that this would happen eventually. And now he needs to pay 60.5 million euros plus interest, or at least somebody needs to pay that, because Sporting said that he left for free to go to Lille when he shouldn't have done that.
Yeah, so old-timers and fans of Portuguese football may remember what happened, but basically a group of Sporting ultras broke into the training ground and they attacked a bunch of the players, including the legendary Bastos.
Yes.
And there was some question about how they got in. A number of the players used this as a reason to terminate their contracts. They got their lawyers forward and said, "Okay, I'm leaving on a free transfer because you can't guarantee my safety. You didn't guarantee my safety, whatever." One of those was Rafael Leao, who moved to Lille on a free transfer.
Yeah.
Obviously, he then moves from Lille to Milan a couple of years later. Sporting are trying to get the money back. They get the compensation. They won the first case. I think they won the second case too. Went to an appeal. Rafael has lost his appeal. He's got one more level of appeal in Portugal. I think it's at the Portuguese Supreme Court.
Yeah.
After that, I'm not even sure if he can go to CAS or if.
But who do you think will pay? He's not going to pay. That's not down to him to pay on his own pocket, right?
It's a really good question. I mean, if Milan has to pay this, their heads are going to explode. Yeah. We already bought it from Lille. I'm not a lawyer. I'm assuming Lille should pay because Lille got him for free.
Yeah, I would think so.
Lille, of course, not in a great financial situation, and they especially don't like parting with money. But also, Lille's ownership group have changed,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
What are you going to do? You're going to go after poor old Gerard Lopez and say, "Hey, Gerard, you have to pay the money?"
Seeing the job he's doing at Bordeaux now, it's like yeah, that's no way to do either. So
it's a tough one and really interesting case. And there's got to be other players in that.
Surely, yeah.
I was going to go look them up. I might do that ahead of Thursday's show because I wonder if they're going to come after money from others.
Yeah.
Brentford lost at home to Wolves, but Jules, this game was delayed by 15 minutes or so because of a drone flying above the stadium. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, I mean, who's the weirdo that, you know, drive his drone above the stadium during a Premier League match? I mean, what are you trying to do here? I don't really understand. I can't get my head around why would you do that. And yeah, of course they had to stop it. Imagine the drone like comes down and kills one of the players on the. I don't know. Anything could have happened, or someone in the stands, or anyone. It's just like, I find it crazy.
There's rules around it, but there you're right by the River Thames,
and
Heathrow's not far. Yeah, there's a lot of crew teams and stuff who are roaming along the river. Some of them, I think, use drones. I don't know why, but it's just such a weird thing to do.
It was so weird. So you had the clash of heads between the two Brentford players. Then the referee lost the battery on his VR. I'm just like, my game. Italy will hold a special training camp later this week. And among the new faces is an old face, Gab, because Roberto Mancini, who knows him really well, is going to call back Mario Balotelli. I mean, surely you never thought that would happen.
It's Super Mario.
Super
Balotelli
Mario in Turkey, no? Because he's scoring goals.
He's scoring goals. He's got 9 already in the first half of the year. He's playing for my old friend Vincenzo Montella there.
That's right.
Balotelli, of course, the man who scored 2 goals to humiliate the mighty Germans in the Euro 2012 semifinal.
But he still didn't win the tournament, so.
The man who set up 93-20. Okay. The man who scored 2 goals at Old Trafford in the 6-1. Yeah. The man who was man of the match in the FA Cup final.
That's
the man who started Manchester City's cycle of success.
Yeah.
No, look, I think he's here to make up the numbers. I think if you're Mancini, you cast as wide a net as you can.
But he's better than Belotti. He's better than some of the guys that he's had, no?
Technically, yes. Mentally, okay. You never know with Mario. You don't know which Mario's going to show up. It's going to show up, sorry. Right, that brings us to an end. But Jules, we got to come back on Thursday because it's international break. We'll have AFCON.
Yes.
And the transfer market will be really getting into swing. So let's come back, do this all over again. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.
Real quick, what's the easiest choice you can make? Window seat over middle? Taco Tuesday over salad. What about selling with Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjewels, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjewels now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/gabjewels.